you're there when your father passes, and you've had a very difficult relationship with the man. Even calling him dad.
I never did. Yeah.
But he leaves you this little note after, and your mother passes, and it says Zaffy, because it's your
Zaffy.
Please look after my little country, Dad. I lost it at that point.
Yeah, it was a pretty, you know, and my response, my first reaction was like, not good, because it also meant that that was foremost, first and foremost in his mind. He didn't say, take care of my wife or your brother.
I was always proud of you.
That's right, nothing.
Yeah. That.
Yeah. There was none of that. And it was not an easy note to sort of unfold, and it took the years, a distance, and to rethink that thing, and to really understand that that's what that generation was about. You know, so many of my friends, and you know, I was in a very high-end reconnaissance unit, and I was like the Columbo there. You know, I mean, everybody else was like, you know, Mr. Kill and, you know, be killed kind of thing. And I came from Canada, you know, I never handled a gun. These guys were like born with a knife between their lips, you know, sort of their teeth, you know, and sort of stealth, and you know, and I'm like, do I really have to, the guy's telling me that I have to kind of do somersaults in the sand here, and really, I mean, I'm fine, thank you, you know, kind of thing. There's a lot of that, you know, in my army career, you know, so I'm kind of, I was at least rather athletic, so I could handle the thing, and that's, I guess, why I got in the first place, but I had no idea. But a lot of friends who were with me in the army had parents who were in the upper echelons of Israeli society. You know, it was the son of a minister, the son of the chief of staff, and they all talk about their fathers as kind of bespoke. These people were not their own. They were kind of in the service of, in some, and it made for very difficult relationships between fathers and especially firstborn sons across the board. So the experience isn't only mine. It is an experience of we're really the first generation born in Israel, with that generation that straddled, you know. But yeah, it was difficult.
Wow.
But the vision that I came, you know, that I did work out, and as I say, you know, I don't like being anybody's spokesman, so I sort of very quickly, and with a little difficulty, but with very quickly kind of, you know, put it into words, so I already had some distance from it, included kind of three, if you will, pillars, you know, there was a sense for me, the original Herzl vision, which was that this should be a secular cosmopolitan state, not a Jewish state, a state where Jews could live and live as human beings and forget that they were Jews, not the opposite. So that was one pillar. You know, another pillar was, at some point they came up with an idea of a new Middle East. And the notion was, when you speak to Palestinians in the know, you know, kind of intellectuals that have thought about Israel, and when they try to articulate what they hate about Israel, it's never Jews, because like, they're Semites, and they, you know, it's always the idea that this is a Western state plunked into a region where the state, the whole idea of a state, is anathema. That's why it's kind of kooky that some Palestinians are pushing so hard to be a state of their own. What they probably need, you know, and I've had a lot of conversations with Palestinians about this, is something much more akin to what Canada has, which is like it's not quite a state, it's a commonwealth, it's a confederation, if you will. It's a loose configuration. That there's some points in our history in Canada where the center is a little bit stronger, you know, you get a Trudeau type, then it gets completely weakened, then the provinces, then we can't somehow ever, you know, it's like Richard Gwynne wrote it, it's like, you know, Canadians are like herding cats. I mean, you know, you can put them all in a bag and sort of like, you know, it's sort of, but the minute you let them out, each one is like scampering somewhere else. And Canada's like that. And that model, in fact, to me, is a much stronger model than the Americans have. You can see the after 200 years, I mean, the Union in the States has never held well. I mean, there's always been hundreds of thousands of people in the South, and they're still flying the goddamn Confederate flag. Yeah. You know, and they're still waiting for Dixie, you know? But the Middle East would be much better under a commonwealth than it would under a state. And so there was a point at which, when they talked about the new Middle East, it was really about fleshing out that idea of a commonwealth and starting to push it forward. That is also for me part of the, and the third is most difficult, and that's a notion Ben-Gurion called the Third Temple. But what he meant by the Third Temple was not a replica of the first two, but kind of a post-monotheistic faith, which, I mean, you know, that this is when I go crazy. This is when I sound like some madman, you know, when I have this like idea that, you know, the Pope and the Chief Rabbi and the Muslim Mufti will get together in Jerusalem and sort of say, okay, listen, it was cool, you know, Catholicism was wonderful, Protestantism was even better, you know, Islam was fantastic, Judaism, great food, you know, great music, what have you, you know, let's put them together and see really what it makes for a third millennial faith that kind of is not a religion, kind of like, here's the assumptions, here's how we work, here's a culture that comes out of it. It's the only possible way in which we are ever going to live in a post-terrorist world. There is no other way. I mean, we could make peace for a while, but as long as these divisions are kind of left unto themselves, they're just going to repeat themselves forever.
The book is The Moral Lives of Israelis, Reinventing the Dream State. I've been speaking with the author David Berlin and The Moral Lives of Israelis, published by Random House of Canada.